Welcome to this deep dive. Wow, looks like we're really getting into it today with this stack of materials on data governance.
Yeah, definitely a lot to unpack here.
You've given us a lot about keeping information safe and making sure it's useful.
Right.
So we're talking encryption, access controls, and even what happens if there's, you know, a data breach.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting to see how much this topic has evolved, you know.
Yeah.
Organizations are having to balance security with actually making data usable.
Right.
It's a whole philosophy. It's not just about the technology.
Okay, so let's get into it.
Sure.
From all of this, what really stood out to you? What was the most interesting thing?
Well, I think one of the things that surprised me was the emphasis on people.
Okay.
You know, we often think about data governance as firewalls and encryption.
Yeah, the tech side.
Yeah, but it's really about people and processes.
So are we talking about, like, who can access what data?
Exactly. Okay. It's about having clear roles and responsibilities for managing data, making sure it's accurate and, you know, used ethically and legally.
I see.
It's a whole system.
One of the articles we looked at used that analogy of a government for your data.
Oh, yeah.
Creating and enforcing data laws.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really interesting way to think about it.
It is. It's a really good analogy because just like in a real government, you need strong leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And all these materials really stress that executive buy-in is crucial for data governance to actually work.
Yeah, it can't just be an IT project, right?
Exactly. It has to be part of the culture.
Yeah, if the leadership doesn't care, then why would anyone else?
Exactly. It all flows from the top.
That makes a lot of sense.
And that brings us to the different roles that are involved in data governance.
Okay.
You've got your data stewards, your data owners, your data custodians.
Okay, a whole team.
Yeah, it takes a village.
All right, so tell me more about these roles.
Okay.
Who are these people and what do they actually do?
All right, so think of the data steward as like the chief data officer for your data.
Okay. I think they develop and implement the overall data governance strategy.
Okay, so they're like the architect of that data government we were talking about.
I like that, yeah.
Okay.
They set the vision and make sure everyone is following the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the data owners.
Okay.
They're usually senior leaders who are responsible for specific data domains.
When you say data domains, are you talking about like all the data related to HR?
Yes.
Or finance or marketing?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So the data owner makes sure that the data within their domain is accurate, complete, and used properly.
Gotcha.
And then you have the data custodians.
Yeah.
And they're more on the technical side.
Okay. So are they the ones like building the systems and setting up the security and all that?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
They implement the policies that are set by the data steward and the data owner.
Okay.
And it's important to remember that even with the best technology, you still need people making decisions about access and security. Right, because technology can't always understand the nuances of, you know, why someone might need to access certain data.
Exactly.
Or should or shouldn't.
It's all about context.
Yeah.
Which is why it's so important to define clear access requirements.
Okay, so this is where it starts to get really interesting.
It does, because it's a balancing act
between
security and usability.
Right.
You want to make sure that the right people have access to the data they need to do their jobs.
Right.
But you also don't want to create unnecessary risk by giving everyone access to everything.
Yeah, you don't want to just open it all up.
No, you need some controls.
So how do organizations find that balance?
Well, one way is to use what's called role-based access control.
Okay.
So instead of granting permissions to individuals, you grant them to specific roles within the organization.
I see.
So, for example, everyone in the marketing department might be able to access customer data, but they wouldn't have access to employee salary information.
Right. It's kind of like that need-to-know concept you hear about in, like, spy movies.
Exactly. It's much more secure than user-based access control, where permissions are tied to specific individuals.
Right. That sounds like a nightmare to manage.
It can be, especially in larger organizations where people are constantly changing jobs or leaving.
Yeah, it makes sense that role-based access would be a lot easier to keep track of.
Absolutely.
Especially for things like auditing and compliance.
Oh, for sure.
Like IPAI or GDPR.
Yeah, it simplifies things a lot.
Now, when we're talking about security, we have to address data breaches.
Of course.
Because it seems like, you know, we hear about a new one every week.
It's a constant threat.
So how can data governance help prevent those?
Well, encryption is a major part of it.
Okay.
It's like putting your data in a locked safe that only authorized people have the key to open.
Okay, so like, what about that little padlock icon in my web browser?
Yes.
Does that mean my data is being protected by data governance?
It does, yeah. That padlock means your connection to that website is encrypted using HTTPS.
Okay.
So any information you send or receive is protected.
Makes me feel a little bit better about online shopping, I have to admit.
It's a good sign.
Yeah.
And it's not just about data being sent over the internet, which we call data in transit.
Okay.
You also have to protect data at rest, which is data stored on your computer or in a database.
Okay, so like encrypting my laptop hard drive would be an example of that.
That's one example.
Okay.
A lot of databases also have built-in encryption features
I see.
so that even if someone steals your computer or hacks into the database, they can't read the data without the encryption key.
Okay, so it's like a secret code.
Exactly, it's scrambled.
Okay.
And then there are even more advanced techniques like data masking, where sensitive information is replaced with fake data.
Wait, hold
I mean,
on. Fake data.
in systems that are used for testing or training.
Okay.
So, for example, if someone is testing a new feature, they don't need to have access to real customer credit card numbers.
Right.
They can use made-up numbers that look real, but don't pose a security risk.
Oh, so it's like a safe version of the data.
Exactly. It's all about minimizing risk.
That's pretty clever.
It's a good strategy.
Okay, so this is all starting to make a lot more sense now.
What?
It seems like data governance is almost like this invisible hand
Yeah.
guiding all these different processes to make sure the data is secure but also usable.
And speaking of guiding processes, another key part of data governance is defining data use requirements.
Okay.
Think of it as a roadmap for how data is collected, processed, used, stored, and eventually deleted or archived.
Okay, so it's not just about protecting data, it's about managing its entire life cycle.
Exactly. You have to consider things like data retention policies, legal obligations, and the value of data over time.
Makes sense.
For example, job applications, you probably don't need to keep those forever.
Right, at some point it becomes a liability more than an asset.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that brings us to another important concept, which is data classification.
Okay.
And this is all about organizing data by its risk level, so
Okay.
you can apply the appropriate security controls.
So break that down for me a little bit.
Sure.
What does data classification actually look like?
Imagine having to treat all data with the same level of security, from like basic website information to your social security number.
Yeah, that wouldn't be very efficient.
No, we
Some
don't.
things need a lot more protection than others.
Exactly. So data classification helps you categorize data based on its sensitivity.
Okay.
So you might have public data that can be shared freely, internal data that's only accessible within the company, sensitive data that needs special handling, and highly sensitive data that's subject to strict legal regulations.
Okay, so it's like a tiered system.
Yes, with different levels of security.
Okay.
And there are industry and government standards that provide guidelines for this.
Okay, now you're getting into acronym territory.
I'm.
Can you explain some of those?
Sure. So you have NIST, which stands for the National Institute of Standards and Technology. They have a framework for identifying and managing PII, which stands for Personally Identifiable Information.
So PII is anything that could be used to identify a specific person.
Right, like their name, address, social security number.
Gotcha.
Then you have HIPAA, which stands for the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act.
Okay.
It's a law that protects the privacy and security of PHI, which stands for Protected Health Information.
So HIPAA is basically NIST, but for health data.
That's a good way to think about it.
Okay.
It covers things like medical records, insurance information, anything that could identify a
That
patient.
would be highly sensitive data for sure.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And then you have PCI DSS, which stands for Payment Card Industry Data Security Standard.
Okay, I'm guessing that one has to do with credit card information.
You got it.
Okay.
It sets standards for how organizations handle credit card data to prevent fraud and theft.
Wow, data governance touches so many different parts of an
It
organization,
really
from
does.
HR to finance, healthcare, e-commerce,
Yeah, it's everywhere.
and it's only becoming more important.
As we generate more and more data, yes.
Right.
Which brings us to another interesting topic, master data management, or MDM.
Okay, what is MDM?
MDM is all about achieving a single source of truth for data across an organization. Think about a large company with multiple departments, each with their own systems and databases.
So you might have customer data in the sales system, the marketing system, and the customer service system, but it might be different in each one.
Exactly, and that can cause all sorts of problems.
Yeah, I've definitely been frustrated as a customer when I've gotten conflicting information from different parts of a company.
We've all been there.
Yeah.
That's why MDM is so important. It's about creating a central repository for key data, like customer information, product information, financial data.
So it's like a master database that everyone agrees is the official source of information.
That's the idea.
Okay.
And it's not just about the technology. It also involves defining clear processes for how data is entered, updated, and maintained.
So it's like data governance at a higher level.
Precisely.
Okay.
Across the whole organization.
So the materials we've been looking at use a great example to illustrate the challenges and solutions of MDM automobile manufacturers.
Oh, yeah.
I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
Well, think about all the different systems that might contain data about a car and its owner.
Okay.
You have the manufacturer's system, the dealership system, the repair shop system, maybe even data from third-party vendors like Carfax.
Right. And all that data might not be consistent or up to date.
Exactly. So yeah. MDM is about finding ways to connect all those different data sources and create a unified view of the customer and their vehicle.
So the manufacturer could track the car's entire history from when it's sold to every service appointment to when it's traded in or sold again.
Exactly. And they can use that information to improve customer service, target their marketing, and even make better decisions about developing new products.
That's really powerful.
It is.
It seems like MDM is really about connecting all those different data silos to create a more complete view of the business.
That's a great way to put it.
This has been really eye-opening.
Good.
We've covered a lot of ground here. The human side of data governance, the different roles involved, the need for strong access controls and encryption, the importance of data classification, and the power of MDM.
It's a lot to take in, but it's all connected.
Yeah.
And it's all crucial for ensuring that data is both secure and usable.
Well said.
Thank you.
We'll pick up our deep dive into data governance in part two.
Sounds good.
Where we'll explore even more strategies and best practices.
Looking forward to it. So as we go deeper into data governance, it's really important to understand the rules and regulations that organizations need to consider.
Okay, so now we're getting into the legal side of things. This is where it gets a bit complicated, I imagine.
It can be.
Yeah.
But to simplify things a little bit, there are four main types of legal framework that affect data governance.
Right.
You've got criminal law, civil law, administrative law, and private regulations.
Okay, that's quite a list.
It is.
Can you break those down for me a little bit?
Yeah.
What makes them different?
So criminal law, that's about preventing things that harm society as a whole.
Okay.
Things like hacking, fraud, stealing intellectual property. These laws are created by legislative bodies and enforced by law enforcement agencies.
Okay.
And penalties for violating them can be pretty serious, including fines and even imprisonment.
So, like, if someone stole a company's customer database and sold it illegally, that would be a criminal offense.
Exactly. It's a crime against the company and against society.
Okay.
Then you have civil law, which is more about resolving disputes between individuals or organizations. Things like breaking contracts, negligence, defamation.
So if a company didn't protect customer data properly, and that data was leaked and people became victims of identity theft, the affected customers could sue the company under civil law.
Exactly. That's a civil matter.
Okay.
And civil lawsuits usually aim to get financial compensation for the harm that was caused.
Gotcha.
Then you have administrative law.
Okay.
This is created by government agencies to put specific regulations into practice and make sure they're being followed.
So it's like the detailed rules that make those broader laws actually work.
Exactly. Exactly. So, for example, in the U.S., the Environmental Protection Agency sets rules for air and water quality.
Right.
Companies that don't follow those rules can face fines or other penalties.
Gotcha.
And then finally, you have private regulations.
Okay.
These aren't actually laws.
Right.
They're more like standards or best practices that specific industries set for themselves.
Yeah. Like, a good example would be the payment card industry data security standard.
Yes. PCI DSS.
That we talked about earlier.
Exactly.
It's not a law created by the government.
Right.
But it's a set of standards developed by the major credit card companies to protect their cardholders' data.
Exactly.
But even though it's not technically a law.
Right.
Companies that handle credit card information pretty much have to comply with PCI DSS, right?
Yeah, they do.
Fuck
if
all.
They don't comply, they could face big fines from the credit card companies, lose the ability to process transactions, and even suffer damage to their reputation.
So these private regulations, they have some real teeth, even though they aren't laws.
They do. They do.
Oh.
They're often tied to contracts or widely accepted industry practices.
Right.
So companies have strong incentives to follow them.
It makes sense.
And while we're talking about contractual obligations, another important part of data governance is understanding data use agreements, or DUAs.
Okay, DUAs.
Yeah.
What are those all about?
So these are essentially contracts that lay out the rules for how data can be shared between different organizations.
Okay.
Let's say your company wants to share some customer data with a marketing partner to help them target their campaigns more effectively.
Yeah, that's pretty common these days.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
But it's crucial to have a DUA in place that clearly defines what data can be shared, how it can be used, and what security measures are required to protect it.
So it's like a prenuptial agreement for data sharing.
I like it.
Setting the ground rules up front to prevent any problems or disagreements down the line.
Exactly, exactly. DUAs can also specify things like how long the data can be kept, what happens if there's a data breach.
Right.
And even what happens to the data if the partnership between the two organizations ends.
It's about protecting everyone involved.
Exactly.
And making sure the data is handled responsibly.
That's the goal.
Okay.
And speaking of responsible data handling,
yeah,
let's talk about data breaches. Even with the best data governance policies,
right,
breaches can still happen.
They can, and they do.
They do.
It seems like every week there's a new story about a data breach.
It's unfortunate, but it's the reality in our digital world.
Yeah.
Which is why it's so crucial to have a clear plan in place for what to do if a breach occurs.
Okay, so what does a good breach response plan look like?
Well, first and foremost, you need to verify that a breach has actually happened. Okay. Sometimes what seems like a breach might just be a false alarm.
So don't hit the panic button right away.
Exactly, and investigate first.
Investigate first, okay.
Once you've confirmed that a breach has occurred, the next step is containment.
Okay.
You got to stop it from spreading any further.
Gotcha.
This might involve shutting down affected systems, changing passwords,
okay,
or even taking systems offline temporarily.
That sounds extreme, but I guess it's better to be safe than sorry.
Absolutely. You got to contain it.
Yeah.
Once the breach is contained, you need to figure out the impact. What data was compromised? How many people were affected?
Oh, yeah.
What are the potential risks?
Essentially, assess the damage.
Exactly. Figure out what you're dealing with.
Okay.
Then you need to notify the people who were affected.
Okay.
This could include customers, employees, business partners, or even regulators, depending on the nature of the breach and the type of data involved.
I bet that's a part that no company ever wants to do.
It's not easy, but it's absolutely necessary.
Yeah.
Transparency is key in these situations. Mm-hmm. And finally, you need to fix the problem that caused the breach and prevent it from happening again.
So things like patching security vulnerabilities,
yes,
updating software, or even revising your data governance policies?
Exactly.
Yeah.
A breach often exposes weaknesses that you might not have known about.
Right.
So it's an opportunity to learn from your mistakes and make your systems and processes stronger.
So it's not just about cleaning up the mess.
No.
What about building better defenses for the future?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why data governance is an ongoing process, not a one-time project.
Right.
The digital world is constantly changing.
Yeah.
And your approach to data governance needs to evolve along with it.
This has been really insightful. But I have to admit, it's a lot of information to digest.
It is. It is.
Data governance is clearly a very complex and multifaceted field.
It is. But remember, it's all about protecting one of your most valuable assets.
Yeah.
Your data. And the effort is worth it when you consider what could happen if you don't have strong data governance in place.
Right. It's like investing in good insurance.
Exactly.
You hope you never need it, but you're sure glad you have it when you do.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
And just like with insurance, the best approach is to be proactive. Put strong data governance practices in place now so you're prepared for whatever comes your way in the future.
That's excellent advice.
Thank you.
We'll continue our deep dive into the world of data governance in part three,
where
we'll explore even more strategies and best practices.
Looking forward to it.
Okay, so we've talked about what data governance is, why it's important.
Right.
But let's get into that how.
Right.
What can organizations actually do? to put this into practice, to build strong data governance practices.
Well, that's the million-dollar question, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's important to remember there's no one-size-fits-all solution here.
Good.
Every organization is different.
Of course.
And so your approach to data governance needs to be tailored to your specific needs and goals.
So where do you even begin?
Well, a good first step is to just take inventory of your data.
Okay.
Figure out what you have, where it is, who has access to it, how it's being used.
That sounds like a huge undertaking, especially for larger companies.
It can be, especially when you have data spread across so many different systems.
Right.
But, you know, luckily there are tools and technologies now that can help automate that process.
Okay, so once you have a clear picture of your, like, data landscape,
right,
then what?
Then you can start developing those policies and procedures manage it effectively.
So it's like creating a roadmap for your data.
Exactly.
Right.
Where it's going, who's in charge.
Yeah. What the rules of the road are.
Exactly. And speaking of rules,
yeah,
another important step is to define clear roles and responsibilities for data governance.
Okay.
We talked about the data stewards and owners and custodians.
Like.
But, you know, you might need other roles depending on the size and complexity of your organization.
So that could include like a data governance committee or a team of data analysts, something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. You need people to analyze the data. You need people to interpret the policies.
Okay.
It's just about making sure that everyone understands what their role is.
In protecting and managing data.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, so once you've got the right people in place,
right,
what are some examples of the kinds of policies you might need to develop?
So it depends, right?
Of course, yeah.
It depends on your industry and the kind of data you're handling. But some common ones are things like data access policies, which spell out who has access to what data under what circumstances.
Okay, so like we were talking about earlier with role-based access control.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You have data retention policies, which determine how long you need to keep different types of data for legal or business reasons.
So you don't just keep hoarding data forever.
No.
Data that you don't even need anymore.
Exactly. Got to get rid of it at some point.
Right, right.
And then data quality policies are really important too.
Okay.
These ensure your data is accurate, complete, consistent.
Because bad data can lead to bad decisions, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You also have your data security policies, which are all about how you protect your data from unauthorized access, use, disclosure, modification, destruction.
Right. So all those things we talked about, encryption, access controls, breach response plans.
Exactly. It all falls under that umbrella. And finally, you might have data privacy policies to comply with regulations like GDPR or CCPA,
right,
things that protect people's personal information.
Okay, so that's a pretty comprehensive set of policies.
It is, yeah.
Covering the entire life cycle of the data.
That's the goal.
From creation to deletion.
Yep.
And it's important to make sure these policies are, like, clearly documented.
Yes, absolutely.
And that everyone in the organization knows about them.
And understands them, yeah.
Because a policy is useless if nobody knows about it.
Exactly, or follows it.
Right, exactly.
And it's not enough to just create policies and then forget about them.
All right, you can't just set it and forget it.
No, you got to review them regularly.
Okay.
Update them.
Ensure they're still effective.
Exactly, yeah, the world changes.
Yeah, the digital world's constantly changing.
All the time, so your data governance practices need to keep up.
Keep up, yeah.
Another key aspect of all of this is communication. You got to keep everyone informed about data governance policies, procedures, any changes that are made.
So it's not just the IT department kind of dictating rules. It's about getting the whole organization involved.
Absolutely. Yeah. Data governance is everyone's responsibility.
Everyone's responsibility.
Yeah. And when everyone understands how important it is to protect and manage data, it creates a culture of data literacy.
Data literacy. I like that.
And accountability.
So it's about empowering people to be good data citizens, so to speak.
I like that, yeah.
Good data citizens.
And finally, I think it's really important to measure how well your data governance program is working.
Okay, so how do you know if you're doing a good job?
Well, there are a number of metrics you can track, things like the number of data breaches, how long it takes to fix data quality issues, the level of compliance with data privacy regulations.
So track your progress and make adjustments along the way.
Exactly, because data governance is a journey.
Yeah.
It's not a destination. You're constantly monitoring, improving.
To make sure that your data stays a valuable asset.
Right. Not a liability.
Wow. This has been a really informative deep dive.
Good. Yeah.
We've gone from like the basic ideas of what data governance is, all the way to these practical steps for how to implement it.
Yeah, we covered a lot of ground.
What stands out to you the most?
I think the biggest takeaway for me is that data governance is really about people. It's about creating a culture where everyone understands the importance of data.
Right.
And feels responsible for protecting it.
Yeah, technology is definitely a part of it, but
it's a tool.
The human element is what makes it all work.
Absolutely.
And I really hope that for our listeners, this has given you a better understanding of what data governance is and why it matters.
Yeah, I hope so too.
It's a complex topic, but you know, it doesn't have to be overwhelming.
Right.
By breaking it down into these smaller steps,
mm-hmm.
organizations of all sizes can start to develop strong data governance practices.
Absolutely, yeah.
And remember, data is powerful.
It is.
It can drive innovation. It can make things more efficient. It can create value.
It can, but like any powerful tool,
yeah,
it needs to be handled carefully and respectfully.
Yeah, that's what data governance is all about.
It is.
So as always, we want to hear from you.
Yeah.
What are your takeaways from this deep dive? What has you thinking more deeply about your own data? Let us know.
Yeah, share your thoughts.
We'll see you next time for another deep dive.